Hello and welcome to the Ben Cotton Podcast. I'm Ben Cotton. This is episode 8 of the weekly edition where I try to offer up something thoughtful or something encouraging or maybe something mildly irritating for your week. By the way, if you find this mildly irritating, just thank your lucky stars that it isn't intensely irritating. If you find this intensely irritating, then please stop listening. Your downloads only encourage me. But for the rest of you, hoping to encourage you a little bit with some thoughts about God and life and whatever else occurs to me as we go along. So, welcome aboard. Today I'm talking about why making friends will change your life and wondering why it seems like no one knows how to do it anymore. Start with a quote by one of my favorite writers, preachers, teachers, thinkers of today, Tim Keller, Dr. Tim Keller. This is a quote actually from his book on marriage, which is a pretty good book, but really it doesn't apply only to marriage. It applies to, I think, all of life and all of relationships. So here it is. Check this out. He says, "To be loved but not known is comforting but superficial. To be known and not loved is our greatest fear, but to be fully known and truly loved is, well, a lot like being loved by God. It is what we need more than anything. It liberates us from pretense, humbles us out of our self-righteousness, and fortifies us for any difficulty life can throw at us." So that's a mouthful, but let's break it down phrase by phrase, and I think you'll see why this is important. First, it says to be loved but not known is comforting but superficial. Think about that for a minute. I'm sure you've had people in your life who have cared about you and befriended you and even loved you, but they didn't really know you. And so you knew deep down that what does that love mean, really? Maybe they loved you because they thought they knew who you were, but you were someone different and you knew that. And there's a certain amount of comfort in that, the love of a stranger or maybe a pastor that doesn't really know your name, but he seems to care about you. That's comforting and it's nice and it's somewhat important that we have that in our life, but it's still superficial. To be known and not loved is our greatest fear. Think about that for a minute. So you have somebody that loves you but doesn't know you. And what's your fear? Your big fear is that they will get to know you, right? And when they find out who you really are deep down underneath your skin, then they won't love you anymore. They'll reject you. And that is the ultimate rejection. It's why marriage, divorce, is so incredibly painful. And quite often it's painful for a very long time because here's this person out there in the world that knows you, really knows you, and ultimately maybe they rejected you if they left you. And they're out there, this person that knows you but doesn't love you. That's deeply frightening. Maybe it's our greatest fear. I think probably Tim Keller's right on that. But he goes on, he says, but to be fully known, right? To be really known for who you are and fully, truly loved is what it's like being loved by God. This, I think I could say, I would add, is our greatest hope. Our greatest desire is to be fully known and fully loved. Just like it's our greatest fear to be fully known and not loved, it's our greatest desire to be fully known and fully loved. And this is what marriage is supposed to be, of course. But I think really, this is how we're supposed to relate to each other. This is what we all really want. And so if we're all walking around this planet looking, searching, desiring to be known by someone else and loved by that same person despite what they see, why do we find it so unbelievably difficult to make friends? My wife and I regularly hear people talk about being lonely and isolated and cut off from other people. They talk about how they don't have any friends, or maybe the friends they have are very superficial. They love them but don't know them. And it's a real problem. So there's just, and it's not just one or two people that we know, it's epidemic. Inside the church, outside the church, across the culture, there seems to be, at least in our observation, increasing levels of disconnectedness between people and loneliness just kind of moving in as like a permanent partner that's always there, and you just get used to the feeling of loneliness. It's incredibly common, and it seems to be more common now than it used to be. And this is crazy because, you know, you'll talk to these people and they'll share how lonely they feel, and then you realize one day that there's all these people sitting by themselves, kind of by the phone, waiting for the phone to ring or for the phone to ding or whatever the case may be, waiting for someone to reach out to them. And that's crazy because they're all sitting there alone in their own houses, separate from each other. And if only those lonely people would connect with each other, you'd have a solution. And it's tragically ironic. It's almost funny if it weren't so sad. It's like the old thing from those romantic movies in the 80s that I grew up watching, where the boy and the girl like each other and they don't know that the other one likes them in return. And they're both, you see them in split screen, the boy sitting by his phone, the girl sitting by her phone, neither one of them having the guts to call the other one. And that's ridiculous. But it's a familiar feeling, I think, to most people. It has nothing to do with personality, introvert, extrovert, all of that. It has to do with a lot of other things that I think are more complicated. And what I'm discovering is that the art of making a friend has been all but lost in our culture. And it's been all but lost in the church. Just the simple act of making a friend, this thing that we learned to do in kindergarten on the playground. You're the new kid in the school and you go to school and you're in class and then all of a sudden the bell rings and you go outside for recess and you're on the playground and you're standing there and you have no friends. What do you do? What do we teach our kids to do in those moments? You say, go say hi. And so you go shuffling across the playground over to the monkey bars. It seemed like where else, that was always the meeting place or the swing set. And you walk up to some kid and you say, hi. And you state your name and you say, do you want to be my friend? And that kid will say yes or no, usually yes. And then what do? You go off and you play. You don't talk about it again. You're just friends. And it is amazingly simple what happens there. And I realize as you get older, it gets a little more complicated. At least the emotions get more complicated, but it doesn't really change that much from kindergarten. And so I wonder why, right? I'm wondering out loud to you right now, why is this? Why is it we have such a hard time making friends? What happens to us as we get older? And where the thing we did on the playground, which was difficult, but we did it because we desperately wanted to have a friend. We didn't want to be the kid standing by himself. And at some point, as we grow up, we learn or we quit trying, as the case may be, to make friends. I have some thoughts on why that is. Probably a combination of things, but here's one. Maybe it's stranger danger. Remember this? Don't talk to strangers. We tell our kids, don't talk to strangers. We think that's going to keep them safe. That's the advice we were given back in the 80s and 90s. Tell your kids not to talk to strangers, stranger danger. Cartoons were made about it and booklets and commercials. And the police officer would come by the school once a year and do a little speech about stranger danger. And amazingly so, we're finding out that pedophiles, which are by and large who we're trying to protect our kids from when we tell them don't talk to strangers. Pedophiles actually look for the kid that won't scream, won't make a fuss, won't fight back, won't stand their ground, won't complain, and will be compliant to whatever that predator wants to do. They look for the kid that is disengaged, unable to interact socially, won't talk to adults, shy, hides, won't look a stranger in the eye. And so this advice of don't talk to strangers actually turns out not to be very good advice. So I say teach your kids to look adults in the eye and engage with them directly. Don't let them hide behind your ankles when someone says hello to them. Teach them to make friends. Studies seem to show that that's what actually makes them safer. Isn't that amazing? But we grow up with this idea of strangers are scary. If I don't already know your name, then I shouldn't talk to you. You're a threat to me in some way. I think that's actually more powerful than we think it is. But also maybe it's the digital age, right? What if you made a rule? What if you made a rule that you don't look at your phone when other people are around? What if you made eye contact with people more in a day than you did with your device? How would that change the way you make friends? If you just decided, I'm just not, when people are around, even if I'm standing in line, I'm not going to stand there and stare at my device. I'm going to make contact with people. I'm going to look and I'm going to observe. I'm going to pay attention to what's around me. I'm going to look. I'm going to have conversations. I'm going to say hello. I'm going to smile at people. What if you did that instead of staring at your device all the time? Maybe it would actually become easier to make friends. It's another thing that I think has an enormous impact on our relationships, probably more than we are willing to think about. But also maybe it's cultural. We used to make neighborhoods. I don't know if you knew this, but we used to make neighborhoods with straight streets. If you go in neighborhoods built in the from the 20s to the 50s into the 60s, you'll see the streets are on a grid pattern. Long, straight streets. And all the lots are kind of square. And when you stand at one end of the neighborhood, you can see all the way down to the end. You can see all the houses. When I was a kid, I could look down the street and I could see if my friends were home, because they would see them out in their driveway, their yard. Now all the neighborhoods have curved streets. You usually can't see more than two or three houses at a time from one position. You can't stand on your front porch and see the entire neighborhood. There was a time when, at the same time with the straight streets, also, all the houses had front porches. Everybody had at least a front stoop, and they used them primarily because there was no air conditioning and no television. If you had a TV, you were rich, and there wasn't that much to watch anyway, right? You didn't have 2 billion channels to scroll through or Netflix or any of that stuff. So most people at the end of the day, when it got cool, they would sit outside on the front porch and people would walk. You could see down left and right down your street, and you could see all your neighbors and friends and kids out playing, riding their bikes and whatnot. And people would come walking by and you'd say hi and have a conversation. We were much more proximal to each other, much more local and locally connected to people in our neighborhood for those reasons. And then, of course, air conditioning came and color television. And what happened was, you just look at architecture and the way they built houses and arranged neighborhoods, the roads got curved so that it felt more private. The front porch moved to the back deck, and we put fences up around our backyard. And now the front porch is just for show. We became more isolated. So some of this is certainly cultural. Combine that with digital age and stranger danger and all the rest, and it's no wonder, actually, that we have lost the art of making friends. But I wonder maybe if there's another element to this that is not external, it's internal, it's heart level, which is maybe it's also selfishness. Because making a friend is costly. Every new person you add to your life costs you something. By definition, there's no way to avoid it. It costs you energy, emotion, costs you time. Quite often it costs you money. It costs you doing things in your personal time that you would normally do by yourself that now you include other people in. It's awkward and risky. What if they don't like me? Remember kindergarten? Remember that feeling? Walking across the playground and approaching that child that you're hoping will be your friend, and that nervousness goes into your stomach like a knot. You're worried. What are you worried about? You're worried about being awkward, seeming weird. You're worried about being rejected. What if they don't like me? Because guess what you're risking when you make a friend? You might look foolish. When none of us want to look stupid. What if I look weird? What if I don't fit in? What if I look like a fool? What if I say the wrong thing? You also might get your personal space invaded, right? People might get to know you, and that worst fear that we started out talking about, of being known and not loved. Your worst fear. What if my worst fear comes true? And this, I think, is the thing that paralyzes us. All the other things we've talked about, the cultural things, the external things, are our contributing factors, but they're also the fruit of what I think is our fear ruling us, our fear of rejection. rules over us. So we build these things around us to protect ourselves from that rejection. We don't want to realize our worst fear. We're afraid of being known and not loved. So remember Tim Keller's thought. He said, to be fully known and truly loved is, well, a lot like being loved by God. This is how Jesus told us to live as his disciples. This is what it actually looks like to be a Christian. Externally, this is the external evidence of being a Christian and being in a Christian community, is that we love each other this way, that we really do know each other, and we love each other. Jesus said, they'll know you by your love, right? What will they know about us? They will know that we have been with Jesus when they see the way we love each other. In other words, when they see the fact that we know each other and love each other, they'll say, oh, that's different. That's my greatest desire. How did they do that? How did they learn that? How is it they can do that? How do they pull that off? That's not human. They must have been with Jesus, because that's the way Jesus loved. So making friends, as it turns out, is not an optional luxury. We think of it like that. We think, I don't really feel like I need friends, so I'm not going to make friends. I'm doing just fine. But making friends gets right down at the core of why we are still breathing on this planet. So the question is, does anyone know you? Does anybody actually know you? When was the last time you made a new friend? Think about it. When was the last time you crossed the aisle, crossed the playground, crossed the lunchroom, crossed the street, and just said, hey, my name is Susie. Will you be my friend? What if you actually did that? It would be awesome, wouldn't it? It would be amazing. I can't actually think of a better way to introduce yourself to a neighbor or a new coworker or someone who walks into the church for the first time. It's actually not that crazy. Maybe it's time for you to do things like that and just simply introduce yourself. Pick up the phone. Pick it up. Reach out to someone and go meet them for coffee. Invite them over for dinner. Say hello. Ask questions. How are you? Where are you from? What do you do? What are you into? What do you like? Get to know people. Make friends. And if you do that, it's like sowing seed. It's like sowing seed. And eventually from that seed will grow a deep, real, life-giving friendship. And that desire that you have might actually get fulfilled. Jesus will express his love to you through other people. And that desire to be known and be loved will get fulfilled in some amazing ways in Jesus. Of course, only Jesus can do this perfectly. So you have to be careful, right? You can't go around asking people to love you like Jesus loves you. Only God can do that. So the Holy Spirit's the one that does that. But we certainly model it, right? We model this in our relationship with each other. This is what Jesus commanded us to do. Love each other as I have loved you, and the world will know that you have been with me by the way you love each other. That's what we're doing here. So go make a friend. Get up. Use that phone for something other than browsing Facebook and Twitter. Stop waiting for the phone to ring. Stop waiting for someone to reach out to you and reach out to other people. Make this your life's mission. And you being an introvert, listen, I'm an introvert. I really am, believe it or not. I'm an introvert. And so I understand what that's like, but that is not an excuse. Everybody needs friendship. Even introverts. Even me. So I want to encourage you to look at your life, and if you're lonely, if you feel like you need connection, go find connection. Step across the playground and say hello. You'll be glad you did. God bless you. We'll see you next week.